Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network or listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribing to our podcast in iTunes. This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. For the next hour, we'll talk about hunting and fishing in your backyard. Greg Knutson is a National Wildlife Refuge Manager at Rydell and also Glacial Ridge. He was also a crane biologist for a long time, and we're up in his neck of the woods. We're up at Middle River in Thief River Falls for Goose Fest this weekend. It's the 43rd annual Goose Fest, and Greg is going to join us to talk about hunting cranes. Now you're thinking, cranes, Goose Fest, what are you talking about? Well, up where Goose Fest takes place is in that northwest crane zone here in the state of Minnesota, and we can actually hunt cranes this weekend, and that's always been a highlight for us up here at Goose Fest. So this weekend, we're going to hunt geese, of course, celebrate Canada geese, but we're also going to chase cranes, and they're just fascinating birds. And if you didn't know much about cranes, sandhill cranes, and how much you can actually hunt them, what they taste like, etc., well, Greg is going to lay it all out for us coming up here on this week's show. Also, Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights Campground and Resort will talk about what it's like to fish Devil's Lake and just how complicated it can actually be. And he's got some tips on how you can fish the lake and what you should do to make your fishing trip to Devil's Lake be a little bit more successful. Also, we'll go in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters as we're into the waterfowl season here. Of course, the splits are starting to happen. The central zone closing up, the southern zone closing up, of course. We'll talk about some waterfowl regulations. We'll talk about how the first week has gone. If you're in the northern zone, of course, it stays open. And this is a time of the year where we take a little trip to northern Minnesota and keep hunting even while the part of the state that we normally live in is closed. But we'll start off with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. This week's show is brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Of course, if you want to book an ice fishing trip for Lake of the Woods, find out more at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. Maybe you want to try that big lake in North Dakota. We'll go to haybaleheights.com and you can book your winter trip or yet this fall, or you can go stay there during the duck hunting season as well. It's brought to you by Visit Thief River Falls, home of the 43rd annual Goose Fest, Thief River Falls in the Middle River, Minnesota area. Visit trf.com and by Mid-Migration Outfitters. If you want to book a guided duck or goose hunt this fall in western Minnesota, come hunt with myself or Tony Crotty. We'll take you out duck hunting or guided goose hunting. Go to MidMigrationOutfitters.com. All right, once again, Joe Henry is joining us here on Sporting Journal Radio. He's up at Lake of the Woods right now where the GLOW conference is going on. And it sounds like it's not just all the outdoor riders that are up there having a great time. But Joe, it sounds like anybody doing anything at Lake of the Woods is doing it pretty well right now. They're having a great time doing it.
You know, we talk about, and by the way, GLOW is the acronym for Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Riders. And, you know, we're hosting a group of about 160 people. It's a combination of media and also, you know, company and organization representatives. Places like Ducks Unlimited, Conceal and Carry Magazine, National Shooting Sport Foundation. You know, there's a lot of other company reps here, Brett, you know, that are repping companies and gun companies, fishing companies. You know, we have Toyota, Ram Trucks. I mean, people, companies, organizations, outdoor media, everybody involved in the outdoor industry, and they have an annual meeting, and we're fortunate enough to host it this year. And part of that is getting people into the outdoors to experience our area and our riches of the natural resource here. And Brett, I'll tell you what, man, you talk about not only the people at this conference, but the locals and stuff doing well. Tell you what, in the last 2 days, limits of geese are coming real easy. A lot of geese up here right now. The duck hunters are out there duck hunting. Ducks have been so-so. They're local birds right now. You know, we do a little bit better with the divers when they're coming down. Walleye fishing's been great. Sturgeon, they're catching a lot of sturgeon. They're getting some big ones. And then, of course, the grouse hunters. I talked to some guys yesterday, and they said, you know, we took a break from the conference and just wanted to slide out in the woods to get away a little bit. Pouring rain. We said, what in the heck are we doing out here? Heck, I think all of them got, you know, a couple of grouse each.
Wow.
So pretty good.
Yeah, that's the one thing I haven't done yet this year that I'm kind of looking forward to is shooting some rough grouse. You know, we're going to be up at up kind of at northern Minnesota. We're going to sharptail hunt a little bit this weekend, which sharpies are fun, but boy, I miss chasing roughs around. So I'm going to have to try to get up that way a little bit. And you were saying some guys were up there filming some goose hunts. Is that right?
Yeah, you know what? One of the organizations at our conference is Ducks Unlimited, and they actually filmed a flock of geese coming into these hunters, and it's really cool video. If you check out the Lake of the Woods Tourism Facebook page, it shows those geese coming in, and of course they're popping at them, and some geese are falling, and then they do a nice video right from the field. You can see how wet it's been. I think we got 3 inches of rain the last couple of days, and it was wet out there, but boy, they were killing geese, man, and the geese were coming in. I think those guys, 5-person limit by 7:15 in the morning. It was good, stupid good.
Yeah, I've heard of a few guys that have been doing well on Canada geese up there, and we had a pretty good early season, September season for Canada geese here in Western Minnesota. Lately, we've been chasing ducks, of course, with the duck opener last weekend, but be fun to get back after some of those Canada geese. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Lake of the Woods, and he's up there right now. You got the Aglow Conference with the outdoor riders, Joe. Do you have some guys from around the state that we'd know up there?
Oh yeah, we sure do. You know, Bill Shirk from Due North Outdoors TV, you know, Ron Share Productions is here. Greg Jones of Midwest Outdoors. You know, I can go on. Mark Strand of Midwest Outdoors. We got outdoor media. We got Tim Lesmeister's here. Gosh, I hate to miss anybody. You know, Bernie Behringer. We got, you know, just a whole bunch of names that you would recognize, and you know, some you might not recognize because they're writing articles and they're doing media and are a little bit more behind the scenes, but I'll guarantee you, you're reading and viewing and taking in their outdoor information.
Now, one of these years, I'm going to have to become a member there so I can come up and get in on some of these trips up there like this, Joe.
You know, I'll tell you what, for the outdoor media person or somebody who's aspiring to be an outdoor media person, you know, Aglow is a great organization, and it's not only the networking, but it's the education. It's the opportunities to gain content for your story material. There's a lot of great reasons to become part of an outdoor organization. And Aglow is a real good one. I mean, it's Great Lakes, so the Midwest, and it's very pertinent, of course, what we do and what we promote in this area.
You know, we got some rain in the forecast. We had finally a few days of dry weather. Prior to that, at least where we are in Western Minnesota, West Central Minnesota there, we had, I think, about 6 inches in the last week or so. So it got pretty wet. Fields are pretty soggy. And you mentioned you got a few inches up there, too. What are water conditions, water levels like right now?
You know, they've gone up just a tad, but I mean, our lake is a big lake. You know, the river probably sees a little bit more of that than anything. And, you know, the river is still clear enough to go fishing. It's plenty clear to go fishing. And you got a little bit of current going through, but you know what? Overall, it's fine. We're not seeing much change. And I can tell you that fish are biting pretty good. In fact, it was funny, Brett, because just before the conference, when people started arriving on Sunday, I shot out and just was going to go make a few casts off the dock. And somebody was fishing off the back of their boat tied up to a dock. And I'd asked him, you know, do you catch a lot of walleyes just jigging over the side of the dock? He said, you know, I get some eaters, you know. Like, what's the biggest? Well, 17 inches, you know, and he doesn't fish a lot. And as I was talking to him, I saw his rod tip go down a little bit. I'm like, I think you got fish on there. He was not against a snake, and he pulled a little bit and pulled back, and he said, oh, that's a fish. 23-inch walleye. So then, of course, I was chatting with him, and I was jigging a rattle trap. Normally I would cast a rattle trap, but I was just jigging that below the dock, and I whacked a, you know, 24-inch pike.
Nice.
But the fish are around because the shiners are running right now. And so now, as we always talk about the big shiner run in the fall, it's game on. I mean, things are happening.
Right. All right, Joe. And for those guys that were goose hunting up there, I know we're a little bit worried about field conditions for goose hunting, you know, driving out into the fields and things like that. Do you know if those guys were able to get out okay? Did they have to walk stuff out? Did you hear about that at all?
I did hear about it. Yep. Their intent was to drive a truck out. They weren't able to do that, so they used ATVs, and the ATVs worked out just fine. It was muddy, though. I mean, full disclosure, it was muddy. It was a mess. But I'll tell you what, it was worth it.
Yeah. All right. Well, winter is right around the corner. If people want to take an ice fishing trip up there, if they still want to get up there this fall to do some fishing and maybe even some grouse hunting or waterfowl hunting or, you know, anything, there's so much to do up there. Where do they find out more information, Joe?
Well, one source is our Facebook page. So it's, you know, Lake of the Woods Tourism and Facebook. Otherwise, check out our website, and that's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, coming up, Greg Knudsen. He's a refuge manager at Rydell and also Glacial Ridge in northern Minnesota. He's going to talk Sandhill Cranes as we get ready to chase some Sandhill Cranes up in that northwestern corner of the state of Minnesota as part of Goose Fest, the 43rd annual Goose Fest. We'll talk more about that coming up as we go in the truck with Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters next. Also, Greg Knudsen, of course, and then we've got Lucas Mertens from Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. We'll find out a little bit more about what's going on at Devil's Lake, too, coming up. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
With 2 million acres of hunting land and water to choose from, the Thief River Falls area offers hunters choices of deer, elk, bear, grouse, woodcock, and sandhill cranes. This is also a growing area for duck and goose populations, making it an untapped bonanza for waterfowlers. In any season, Thief River Falls is truly a hunter's paradise. Visit Thief River Falls for an authentic hunting experience and a variety of comfortable lodging amenities. They're pet friendly too. Plan your trip today at www.visittrf.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman, and if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com. Back on Sporting Journal Radio, it's Brett T-Bone Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com. You can listen on demand there or by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, and right now we're in the truck with Tony Crotty here from Mid-Migration Outfitters. Tony, we've got a week of the waterfowl season here in Minnesota under our belt. What do you think so far?
We've done pretty good. We've shot ducks consistently daily, had some pretty good days, some okay days, and no complaints here.
I've been getting a lot of reports of a lot of Canada geese up in northern Minnesota, and that's got to mean, I mean, we've had some Canada geese around. We've been focused on ducks more or less here this week, but that's got to, it's got to kind of make you feel good about what's in store for us here in the future.
Yeah, I think we're going to be targeting more geese than ducks over the next week here as we're up at Goose Fest, and then when we go up to the annual what we call the duck hunting trip or our duck camp, but there's more geese up there than ducks right now, so that's what we'll chase.
I've heard from a few people that the wood duck hatch was just unbelievable, and we don't do it a lot, but we actually targeted woodies a few times this week. There's a lot of wood ducks around.
Yeah, there is a insane amount of wood ducks around right now, so we're kind of taking advantage of that. Which is kind of odd for me because I kind of tend to shy away from wood ducks, but it's been good.
You can't say that in Minnesota. That's like our state bird, man. Come on.
Yeah, I've never been very big fan of hunting them. We definitely shoot our fair share, but we targeted them this week, did pretty well on them, shot some bands, and it was a good couple days hunting.
Explain to us why you don't hunt wood ducks very often.
Kind of like the past couple of days, the big thing is you can only shoot three of them. Usually when you target them, they go to specific places that you're only going to find wood ducks. So, say you got two, three guys that are going, you can only shoot nine. And a lot of times they'll pack in and you're going to be in and out in a hurry, and you don't really get the opportunity at any other birds. And then on top of that, if you are hunting in places that wood ducks are not going, they're about the only duck that's going to fly right past you and never even give you a look, just because they're so specific on locations that they go.
Tony Crotty, our guest here. We're in the truck on Sporting Journal Radio. The waterfowl season is underway. We live in the central zone. And now, granted, this weekend you can still hunt in the central zone. But after this, we're up north right now. But after this weekend, it closes down for what, 5 days?
Yep, it'll close down for 5 days, and then we reopen, and that's when we start to get real busy.
Yeah, so we'll be busy guiding, I know, next weekend when we come back. So always check your regs, of course, for wherever you're at. But if you're in the central zone, it closes October 1, and then it reopens again Saturday, October 7, and then it's open through November 26. In the southern zone, you close for 2 weeks. So you'll close October 1st and then reopen October 14. And stay open through December 3rd. And, you know, I know some people complain it gets a little confusing. Geez, we're open. Are we closed? Why is it do this? But I'm a fan of the splits. Tony, I know we talk about it a lot of times. We like the splits because it allows us to go later into the season.
Correct. Yeah, the splits they're a good thing. They're a needed thing. It gives us a little bit of a break in between local ducks and maybe some migrants that come down. It all kind of depends on weather. But we'd like to see it a little longer so we can go a little later, but the splits are needed, and it's definitely a bit confusing. So like you say, everybody wants to, you need to look at your regulations and see when you can hunt till.
The other two important regulations that people seem to always take issue with, and it's something you need to keep an eye on the regs for to make sure you're up on these things. It's the 4 p.m. closure. Whether you're a fan of it or not, it is in place, and it goes through October 6th. So on October 7th, you can hunt until sunset. So you gotta quit waterfowl hunting at 4 p.m. through October 6th, then back to sunset on October 7th. And then the other one is motorized decoys. Tony, what's your thought on the motorized decoy ban?
I think they need to get rid of it. It's an old rule, old school rule. You know, all the other states around us can use them starting opening day. There's no reason that Minnesota shouldn't be able to do the same.
And that opens back up this December. I don't know why I keep saying December. October 8th is when you can use motorized decoys on waters that aren't fully contained by state wildlife management area. So if you're on private land or whatever, you can use those motorized decoys starting up again on October 8th. And Tony, we're going to be up at Goose Fest, like you said, 43rd annual Goose Fest taking place this weekend in Middle River, Thief River Falls area. And we're going to hunt some cranes. You haven't shot a crane yet.
Nope, haven't shot one yet. Hope to maybe get my first one this weekend and maybe a few more after that.
Pretty interesting bird, the crane, and we're going to find out more about them. The hunting season is open September 16th through October 22. You can hunt them in that northwest corner of the state. The daily bag limit is one. Greg Knutson is a crane biologist. He spent a lot of time working with cranes. He's a refuge manager now. He's going to join us here later in the show to talk Sandhill cranes. We also have Lucas Mertens that we're going to talk to next here from Devil's Lake, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. This is In the Truck. And Tony, of course, we talked about guiding coming up when we get back from this trip up to northern Minnesota. So the central zone, when that opens back up October 7, we really kick the guiding season into high gear. We do still have some openings for people if they want to come out and guide a duck or goose hunts.
Yep, have openings available. Get a hold of me by phone or through the website.
And that website is midmigrationoutfitters.com. Tony, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
It's Brett Amundson. This is Sporting Journal Radio, and we're up at Goose Fest this weekend. It's a 43rd annual Goose Fest, and it's taking place once again in Middle River, Minnesota, just about 20 minutes north of Thief River Falls in the northwestern corner of the state. And what's really cool about this part of the state is not only can you hunt sandhill cranes up here, you got Canada geese and ducks and everything like that, but you also have sharp-tailed grouse. So it's kind of a unique part of the state. A little bit, because you can't really hunt sharpies across the majority of the state. You can hunt them up here. You can hunt cranes up here. And we're going to do that as part of Goose Fest this year. We're going to hunt sandhill cranes. We're going to hunt sharp-tailed grouse. And we're going to film it for Prairie Sportsman. So you'll be able to watch an episode of Prairie Sportsman. It's coming up on Pioneer Public Television. We'll have new episodes starting again in January. Check your guide, search for Prairie Sportsman. You'll be able to find it if you have the satellite companies. I believe it's Channel 10 in most areas. Of course, you can watch it over the air, too, from Appleton to down to Worthington, up to Fergus Falls, and anywhere along there you can watch it, which is an antenna on your TV. And then various cable systems, of course, have it, too. You can watch it online Pioneer.org. Yeah, find us on Facebook, Prairie Sportsman on Facebook. You can find us on Snapchat as well. Prairie Sports is our username on Snapchat. We're always doing behind-the-scenes stuff on Snapchat. So, in fact, you might still be able to see some of the behind-the-scenes of the crane hunt on Snapchat if you go there now on the Prairie Sportsman. Prairie Sportsman Snapchat account. We're going to hunt those on Friday. So, but you'll see more snaps from the weekend up here at Goose Fest on the Prairie Sportsman Snapchat account. So, at Prairie Sports on Snapchat, of course. We're on Instagram with Prairie Sportsman as well. So just search for Prairie Sportsman, pioneer.org. You'll be able to find out more information about the Prairie Sportsman television show with myself, Brett Amundson. So check it out. From the 43rd annual Goose Fest, we're hunting up here with Corey Loeffler from the DRC Call Company. We're going to hunt cranes. We're going to hunt geese, of course, as well, too. And we're going to learn more about those sandhill cranes with Greg Knutson, who's coming up next here on Sporting Journal Radio. You may have noticed a lot of cranes around the state of Minnesota. Of course, in North Dakota, you've been able to hunt cranes for a number of years. In Wisconsin, you'll see cranes traveling through central Wisconsin. And there's two different populations of sandhill cranes in the United States. We're going to learn a little bit more about the two different populations. We're going to find out why you can only hunt in one part of the state and whether or not Greg thinks you should be able to hunt throughout the entire part of the state. So Greg will come up next. He's a National Wildlife Refuge Manager at Rydell and also at Glacial Ridge. And he used to be a crane biologist and worked up at Agassiz up in that Thief River, Middle River Falls area in northwestern Minnesota. So follow us on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page as well. We'll have some pictures there from this weekend and, of course, on all the various Prairie Sportsman social media accounts. All right, so Greg Knutson is coming up next here on Sporting Journal Radio. And then next week, we're going to talk to Bruce Davis from the Minnesota DNR about duck banding and putting backpacks, GPS trackers on mallards next week here on Sporting Journal Radio.
All in all, it's just another brick in the
It's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
With 2 million acres of hunting land and water to choose from, the Thief River Falls area offers hunters choices of deer, elk, bear, grouse, woodcock, and sandhill cranes. This is also a growing area for duck and goose populations, making it an untapped bonanza for waterfowlers. In any season, Thief River Falls is truly a hunter's paradise. Visit Thief River Falls for an authentic hunting experience and a variety of comfortable lodging amenities. They're pet friendly too. Plan your trip today at www.visittrf.com. Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, this is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Podcastable in your iTunes. You can subscribe to our podcast or listen on demand at sportingjournalradio.com. One of my funnest things to do every year, something I look forward to every year, is going up to Goose Fest up in Middle River, that Thief River Falls area of northwestern Minnesota. I get to hunt with Corey Loeffler. I get to see some friends up there every year. It just happens to fall right around on my birthday, too, so it's kind of a birthday celebration for me. And every year now, one of the highlights for me is chasing sandhill cranes. And some people look at me, you can hunt sandhill cranes? What the heck you do with those things? Well, A, they're delicious, first of all. They're such cool birds. I think they're just such neat birds. The history behind them, the noises they make, the way they look, I think they're really interesting. And the fact that you can hunt them up in the northwestern part of the zone just has always kind of fascinated me. So I want to talk about sandhill cranes today. Greg Knutson is our guest right now on Sporting Journal Radio. He's a refuge manager at Glacier Ridge and also Rydell National Wildlife Refuges. Thanks for joining us here on the show, Greg.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brett. I appreciate it.
So how cool are sandhill cranes?
They're one of my favorite birds. I echo exactly what you're saying. I've worked with sandhill cranes since the early 2000s when we worked out in North Dakota, and I love them. I love to hunt them, and I love to study them, and just love to see them. That's one great thing about Minnesota is they spend the summer here, they breed there, and in North Dakota you get a much narrower period of time when they're actually hanging around, just a brief blip in the spring and a little longer blip in the fall, so...
Yeah, and we've really watched, and we'll get into this more in depth as we go here, but it seems like we've really watched the populations grow, and we had a cabin in northwestern Wisconsin. In fact, my parents are just getting ready to sell it, unfortunately, but we've been up there for the last 30-some years or something like that, and we never really saw cranes over there. And now, all summer long, and we see cranes all over the place over there in northwestern Wisconsin. And when you drive through central Minnesota, you see cranes all over the place. And even lately, you know, I live in that Lac Parle area in western, southwestern Minnesota there. And we're starting to see cranes kind of move into that area as well. So sure. It seems like the populations are doing pretty well.
Yeah, that eastern population in particular that you're talking about when you reference, you know, birds in Wisconsin and down in southwest Minnesota and central Minnesota, what they call the eastern population is definitely growing. I mean, it's growing at, I think, some of the things I've seen suggest a rate of maybe 4% annual average growth rate, which doesn't sound like a lot, but cranes are, you know, they don't have a very high reproductive potential. They're a long-lived bird, but they... generally don't start breeding till they're 4 years old. They lay two eggs in a year, and they typically only raise one young to fledge. So for them to be growing at that rate, that population is definitely doing well.
Well, what happens if they lay two eggs and only one makes it? Is there predation, or is there health issues, or what happens?
It's, you know, it seems odd, but it's just a competition between the two young birds, and I'd say maybe about 10% of the time you have both cranes fledge, and that's typical of sandhill cranes, whooping cranes, so it's just a definite oddity.
You talk about them being long-lived. How old does a sandhill crane normally get?
Well, you know, certainly there's records of birds in the wild, numerous records, you know, greater than 20 years old, so I don't think that's uncommon by any means, so definitely a pretty long-lived bird.
And as a species, they're an ancient bird, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, they are. You hear them often referred to as one of the more prehistoric birds. You know, I think there's fossil records of greater than 2 million years old, so I guess that's why they look like a pterodactyl.
Well, yeah,
we
call them pterodactyls, and dinosaurs, just like, how accurate is that? I mean, how close to a pterodactyl are they?
Yeah, they're a ways away, but again, when you see them cruising the sky, it's hard not to picture that. So,
come on, 3 million years, 65 million years. That's pretty close, all right? I
mean, right, exactly.
Greg,
make the leap.
Yeah, Greg Knutson, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about sandhill cranes, not just in the northwestern part of the state, but all over the place, because we do have the two populations. The western population kind of creeps over into that northwestern corner, and then that eastern population comes up through Wisconsin into central Minnesota, and that western population is larger. Tell us a little bit more about those two populations and why one of them is larger than the other.
Sure. So the one we talked about first, the eastern population, that's the one that you're, you know, seeing breeding in central, southern Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, it's expanded into other states, Ontario. That's, I think the last estimate that was made on that is probably a little over 60,000 birds. And, you know, that population migrates kind of to the south and east. They've got some huge staging areas, a big piece of state land in Indiana where bulk of the population congregates, and then they migrate down to Florida. What you referenced as the western population, it's referred to as the mid-continent population, the MCP, and its population estimate most recently, they do annual surveys for it, is somewhere around 470,000 birds.
Oh,
so
wow.
Considerably larger. Their breeding range is, you know, tremendous. As we touched on and will touch on, you know, they breed up in the northwest corner of Minnesota, but they also breed throughout Canada, Alaska, even Siberia. People who hunt cranes in central North Dakota are, you know, if you shoot enough of them, you're in all likelihood going to kill some birds that grew up in Siberia. So, so it's a big, expansive population. They kind of funnel down, you know, through the middle U.S. and then most of them winter in Texas. You got a few that winter over in New Mexico. So, and the unique thing about, you know, that eastern population, it's the greater subspecies. It's the what we'll call the big cranes, you know, the ones that can reach, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 pounds even. That mid-continent population is made up of several different subspecies. So it includes what are referred to as lesser sandhill cranes, which I've got some that are only 5 pounds. It's got some of the graders in it. And then there's a what they call a Canadian subspecies, which, depending on who you talk to, some people feel that's just kind of a mix of lessers and graders where they cross over.
How can you tell? I mean, obviously there's a size difference, but is there anything else you can differentiate the subspecies with?
There is. There's what you'd call morphological differences. So like bill length, length of that bill or that culmen, length of their tarsus, the part of their leg, length of their wing cord, basically from the elbow of the wing out to the end of the primary. And that was some work that we did a lot in North Dakota, was trying to determine, okay, hunter-harvested birds, are these, you know, birds that are harvested from area X, are they primarily lessers or are they graders? So you can dump all that data into a model and get a pretty good estimate of, you know, which subspecies that crane is from.
Are you starting to see some mixing of the mid-continent population and the eastern population?
You know, there was graduate work done by an individual out of University of Minnesota just the last couple of years, and I don't have his information handy, but it's, you know, it's interesting. Part of his work was to try to determine whether there was mixing and what is that kind of delineation between the two populations. You know, you think of, again, northwest Minnesota is that mid-continent population, and then you get down, I think at least, kind of towards that Detroit Lakes area and, you know, parts south and east of there, you're looking at eastern population birds. And I think that was kind of the general consensus. But the research that was done by that young man, I think, found that there's, you know, it's not all crystal clear. There's certainly not a nice tight line. And there's some overlap and some odd things going on. And I suspect he came up with just about as many questions as he did answers, typically the case with research.
So. Sure. Is it unique that they both kind of migrate to Minnesota?
Yeah, to have two different populations like that in the same state is certainly unique.
So it's because that mid-continent population is over 400,000 birds strong, and the eastern population is only 60,000. That's why you can only hunt them up in that northwest corner, right? I mean, that makes sense. Obviously.
Right. That's why right now we're just hunting those birds in Northwest, because they are part of that mid-continent population. You know, and so is the eastern population, is it large enough that you could have a hunting season? I would definitely say yes. And, you know, there's a couple states, I think Kentucky and Tennessee currently have seasons on that eastern population. There's certainly other states like Minnesota and Wisconsin that have, you know, discussed it and are currently discussing it. The season would have to be pretty conservative, you know, as is the case, you know, with the structure of the current season here in Minnesota. But, you know, they both have huntable populations. That mid-continent population, there's just such a tradition of hunting. I mean, there's, I think, 10 different states in the Central Flyway. You can hunt them. A couple different provinces in Canada, that, you know, they've been hunted in places like North Dakota and Texas for, well, close to 60 years, going back almost to the 60s. So there's quite a tradition of hunting sandhill cranes, even though a lot of people, even, you know, as close by as Minnesota, don't even realize it. It's just across the border. They've been shooting them for years.
So. Right. I talk to people all the time about that. And I got to take a quick break, but I want to talk to you more about the perception of sandhill cranes and the possibility of maybe a statewide hunting season here in Minnesota. Greg Knudsen is our guest. He's the refuge manager with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at Glacial Ridge and Rydell National Wildlife Refuges. Talk about more sandhill cranes coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Teachers, leave them kids alone. Hey. Teacher, leave these kids alone.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. Our guest right now, Greg Knudsen. He's a refuge manager with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at Glacial Ridge and Rydell National Wildlife Refuges, and has spent a lot of time with sandhill cranes. And I got a lot of questions because I think these are just fascinating birds. I love the taste of them. I love the look of them. I love the sound of them. I love the history behind them. And I've only got a short time knowing about these birds, learning about these birds. You know, I grew up hunting in Minnesota and even western Wisconsin, and we didn't see cranes very much. Now we've seen that population grow. There's the two populations, like we talked about, this eastern population that comes up from Florida and comes through Wisconsin into central Minnesota, and then this mid-continent population that comes up through the central United States and then spills over into northwestern Minnesota. And that population is much larger, which is why we have that hunting season in northwestern Minnesota. And a lot of people don't realize that you can hunt these birds. And when I tell them, I'm going to go hunt sandhill cranes, they always kind of cock their head and look at me, look at me kind of funny, because a lot of people may not realize that you can hunt these birds. And as you said before the break, people have been hunting them in some states in the United States for 60 years or so.
Yeah. There's quite a tradition. I mean, I think Texas and North Dakota are certainly the two states where sandhill crane hunting has the greatest tradition and, you know, the greatest number of birds harvested, greatest number of hunters. But even in those states, you know, it's compared to people that go after, you know, ducks or geese or pheasants or deer, it's a pretty small percentage. But there are always some pretty avid hunters around in each state that has a season, I think.
Now, I've been hearing rumors that Minnesota could see a statewide season on cranes. And as you said, the eastern population has grown to about 60,000 birds, and you thought that would be a high enough number to sustain a hunting season. Do you think we'll see a statewide season in Minnesota?
At some point down the road, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, that's as a somebody in refuges, it's outside of, you know, what I'm working on at this point in time or what I would be involved with, but would I be surprised to see a season in Minnesota or Wisconsin on that eastern population? No, not at all. You know, like I said, it would have to be a conservative season, but there's definitely interest from hunters in those areas, and, you know, there's crop depredation concerns. That's what's, I know, has driven some of the interest as far as agencies looking at the potential for a season, so... Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
I've heard from a lot of farmers in that central Minnesota area that that have complained about crop depredation like that. So with that being said, if we saw a statewide hunting season on cranes, you said it would have to be conservative. So when I first started hunting cranes, which granted wasn't that long ago, a few years ago, you could hunt two or you could shoot two in northwestern Minnesota. Then 1 year, literally I had heard rumors about a statewide season. And next thing I know, regulations come out and you can only shoot one of them in northwestern Minnesota. I guess I was surprised at the reduction in the bag limit when there was talk about going statewide. Are the two related, or why was there a reduction in bag limits in northwestern Minnesota?
Sure. So that didn't have anything to do with the eastern population, certainly. But there were actually two changes I'll talk about to the structure of the season from 2010. You know, the first season, it was it started concurrent with the early goose season. So, you know, the crane season started right around September 1, or that Saturday closest to September 1, and it was two cranes a day. You know, there was a larger than anticipated harvest of cranes that year. There was, you know, maybe more interest than was anticipated. And that opening weekend of goose up in that, you're familiar with the Middle River area and, you know, that northwest part, a lot of goose hunters up there and a lot of people that were, you know, anxious to harvest a crane or two. But what we started to figure out pretty quickly was that a larger percentage of the birds that were being shot than expected were of Minnesota origin, meaning they were our own Minnesota breeding birds versus migrant birds from Canada. And I had initiated a study to try to, you know, help confirm that by taking some hunter harvested samples. I think over 3 years we collected about 180 or 190 cranes from hunters, and we took some body part samples, some wing feathers and some of the toenails, and did work with an individual up at University of Saskatchewan. And we're able to determine the origins of those birds. So what percentage of those birds that are being shot in northwest Minnesota are locally breeding birds versus birds from Canada. And we determined that, you know, plus or minus, we're looking at probably 3/4 of the birds that we're shooting up there are our own breeding birds. So that raised some concerns as far as, you know, how sustainable is a hunt. When, again, as I said, cranes, you know, pretty a long-lived species, but pretty low reproductive potential. And you have potential, you know, through hunting season to definitely drive those numbers down. So in 2012, I believe it was, the crane season was backed up by 2 weeks, with the thought process being that, okay, we'll delay the season by 2 weeks, and hopefully more of that pressure will be focused on some of the migrant cranes that do come down from Canada. That made a big difference in the harvest. If you look at the harvest records over the first 7 years, that when they switched that opening date and backed it up 2 weeks, it really knocked that off. And I think a lot of that was just, you don't have, you know, you get a lot of fair weather goose hunters that just go out for that first weekend or those first maybe 2 weekends. And if they get a chance at cranes, I mean, obviously, yeah, they're going to take a poke and probably harvest some cranes. But that pressure dies off pretty quickly, as you know, from a lot of people out there. So that really change things. And then in 2012, Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR worked together to conduct helicopter crane surveys during the breeding season in Minnesota. And that was kind of our first real valid breeding population estimates we got on cranes in Minnesota that are breeding there. And, you know, over the 5 years that survey was done, numbers were variable. But in 2014, we had a particularly low population estimate. And, you know, again, so we get that data into our hands in June. And so that I think triggered the DNR saying, okay, we're going to reduce this in the fall of 2014 from two cranes to one. And I completely agree with that decision. I think it was a wise decision. So it's easy when you drive around up in that Middle River and you see all the tons of cranes, and my kids are always asking me, why can we only shoot one?
Sure.
So many.
You
know?
Sure.
You get a very, very large percentage of the breeding population that hangs out in that, you know, Agassiz Refuge Middle River area. It's definitely a lot of birds right there, but it's a large percentage of all the birds that we've got breeding up there. So.
Sure. Well, and I think for a lot of people, just the chance to shoot one, I think is sufficient. But I'll tell you what, after I started eating some, I want to shoot more of them because I think they're delicious.
You got to go over to North Dakota where you can get three a day.
Yeah, that's so. Right. Well, they're nicknamed the ribeye of the sky, and I didn't believe it until I finally ate one. And now, you know, every year for Goose Fest, it seems like me and Corey Loeffler are up there finding new ways to cook them up. He's been pretty creative in cooking them up, and you don't even need to be that creative with them because they are pretty tasty. Greg Knutson is our guest here. He's a refuge manager with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Glacier Ridge and Rydell, and spent time as a crane biologist too. You spent time at Agassiz as well up there, so you know about these birds. And we just got a couple of minutes left here, so I just want to talk a little bit about hunting them. And you mentioned something about moving the seasons. You moved the season back 2 weeks. Could you foresee even moving it back any further, or do you like where the season is at now?
Probably not. I really think they have the season structured pretty well where it can be sustainable over a long period of time. And that's the key. I mean, you know, I like to hunt cranes. I like to see cranes. I want to see them, you know, conservation come first. And I think the way that season's structured now and with the amount of hunting pressure and harvest, I think it's in a pretty good place. So you move it back too much farther, you know, and they can allow for a 37-day season. You move it back too much farther and, you know, it's kind of like the duck season some years where, you know, things
They're
freeze
gone.
Up and it doesn't take much to push cranes south weather-wise. And so if you backed it up too much more, you know, you'd maybe only end up with a 15 or 20-day season. So I think it's in a pretty good spot right now.
What tips do you give hunters that want to chase cranes?
Well, you know, they're probably not that different than tips you'd give goose hunters. I mean, scouting is key, really kind of focusing in. It's cranes, as you know, having hunted them, they're, in my opinion, quite a bit more difficult to decoy typically than geese are. And very, you know, exceptionally wary, exceptionally leery of anything that seems out of the norm. But again, if you can find a spot that they really want to hit, you know, whether it's a small grain stubble early or better yet, you know, some corn stubble a little later in the fall, you know, that's key. So, and then concealment and my experience hunting cranes, the quantity of decoys isn't that important. I mean, I've had good hunts with, you know, as few as, you know, 8 or 10 decoys, but, getting some quality decoys, there's certainly not a lot of options out there, but getting a nice realistic setup seems to be pretty important too. So.
And where would you set them up more to the side so your concealment is maybe a little bit better, or set them up further away than maybe you would Canada goose decoys, or where do you place them?
Sure, you know, it's tough if you're trying to do Canada geese and cranes together. In my opinion, I mean, if you're wanting to get everything, and I personally enjoy hunting cranes more than geese, so I tend to set up four cranes and, you know, generally end up shooting a couple geese as a bonus, if you will. But I like to set the decoys upwind of me and try to get those cranes, you know, they tend to come in low oftentimes, and get them focused on the decoys upwind of you, flying right over you, staying low. So.
Sure. Sure. Well, I'm excited to get back up into that Middle River, Thief River Falls area and chase cranes, chase geese, of course, and just be part of the Goose Fest festivities. And it sounds like we'll be seeing you up there too, Greg. So I appreciate the time here and telling us more about Sandhill Cranes. Of course, we're going to put you on TV with Prairie Sportsman talking about all this stuff too.
Sounds good.
I appreciate it. So, Gregory Knutson, Refuge Manager, Glacier Ridge and Rydell National Wildlife Refuges. Thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brent.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.